The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
The S&P 500 hits an all-time high after crossing the 4,000-point threshold for the first time ever.
The official U.S. jobs numbers for March are out, and they point to an economic recovery that took a major leap forward last month. 916,000 new jobs were created in March. That number was way better than expected and nearly double February's upwardly revised hiring figure, according to data released Friday by the Labor Department. The jobless rate in March fell to 6%, a crisis-era low.
President Biden has unveiled his $2 trillion proposal to tackle rebuilding the nation's infrastructure and combat climate change. The so-called American Jobs Plan puts $600 billion toward repairing roads, bridges, and airports. It'll also boost electric vehicle capacity with 500,000 charging stations. Billions of dollars will go to utilities, including clean drinking water, high-speed internet, and electrical systems, as well as new schools. And to pay for it all, the White House wants to boost the corporate income tax rate from 21% to 28%.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Stocks are in record territory this week, with the S&P 500 crossing 4,000 for the first time in history. As the Biden administration proposes massive new spending on infrastructure, the market seems to be liking all the stimulus. But warning, massive new taxes and rising interest rates could pose problems down the road. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Frank Barbera joins me this week. Frank is still bullish. However, he's keeping an eye on inflation and bond yields. The 10-year Treasury note is now approaching 1.75%. It's hard to believe at the beginning of the year it was below 1%. And later on in the program, Chris Poplava will be here with another edition of Smart Macro. But first, let's find out what moved the markets this week with Ryan Poplava.
Well, it was an abbreviated week on Wall Street. After last week's technical bounce off the 50-day moving average, stocks charged higher to finish this week at a new all-time high record for the S&P 500, while the NASDAQ and Russell 2000 saw some quarter-end rebalancing to help rally those areas above their 50-day moving average. Stocks were helped at the end of the week by a few things. There was the announcement Wednesday after the market closed of President Biden's $2.3 trillion infrastructure spending plan called the American Jobs Plan. The goal of the plan, as stipulated by the White House, is to create jobs, rebuild the country's infrastructure, and position the U.S. to outcompete China. Now, the wealthiest country, they said, is ranked 13th in overall quality of infrastructure. So let's break down the plan. $621 billion will go towards transportation infrastructure for electronic vehicles, rail expansion and repair, bridge, highways, roads, and modernizing public transportation, upgrading airports, ports, and waterways. But the bulk at 28% of that portion is going towards electronic vehicles. The next portion is will be a focus on American homes, schools, and underground water infrastructure and broadband at about $650 billion, and especially for broadband in areas that still don't have it. $400 billion will go towards improving the access quality of affordable home or community-based care for elderly and disabled. And finally, $300 billion on research, development, and manufacturing, $180 of which is going towards clean energy and climate change research, and $50 of which is going towards semiconductor manufacturing. So again, transportation, homes, schools, and underground water infrastructure, more towards $400 billion towards quality, affordable homes, and community-based care for elderly, and then finally $300 billion on research, development, and manufacturing. The plan will be paid for by a rise in corporate taxes up to 28% and an increase to the minimum tax on U.S. multinational corporations to 21%. The White House projects that spending of this magnitude will be fully paid for in about 15 years. But that's not all. There are reports and rumors that the president will seek another stimulus package for $2 trillion later this month. Now, the Republican Party has already stated this week they will fight the bill, so the news of the plan is not baked into the market yet, still has to go through Congress. Now, the 10-year Treasury yield jumped up to 1.78% earlier this week on possibly this news, but on Thursday after the unveiling of the plan, investors bought the dip, driving rates lower to 1.68% last I checked, which also helped fuel that rally in tech stocks, growth stocks, and the areas of the market that have been hurt by rising interest rates, small cap stocks as well. On Thursday, the leaders were energy, technology, communication services, and financials on the back of that infrastructure bill announcement. I focus somewhat on the $50 billion announced for semiconductors in the plan because we have known for some time there has been shortages. And Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing announced on Thursday they plan to invest $100 billion over 3 years to expand production, just as Micron announced positive earnings and upbeat guidance, lifting the group very nicely on Thursday. Another reason stocks were up is related to economic news this week. While jobless claims were unexpectedly higher by about 61,000 for the week ending March 27th, some of the bigger reports this week were the ISM Manufacturing Index report for March, which came in at about 64.7, is the highest level we've seen since 1983. And the indicator has been up 10 consecutive months, a very positive sign. The Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index jumped to 109.7 from 90.4 in February. And if you track the trend of consumer sentiment as we do, it tends to have a pretty close correlation with the stock market. The final piece of news I want to share with you is the news that OPEC will boost production between May and July in addition to phasing out the Saudi Arabia's 1 million barrel per day supply cut earlier this year in anticipation for greater demand. And the news didn't send oil prices down as typically news of higher supply would, but rather back up to above 60 for West Texas Intermediate. Overall, you know, looking at the plan, it's an aggressive spending plan with an aggressive tax plan to support it that is projected to be about $300 billion in taxes per year and about 1.36% of GDP. And that's bigger than the Clinton tax increase, which amounted to 0.4% of GDP back in 1993, according to the Wall Street Journal opinion piece that came out on Thursday. It's clear to investors that spending plans from here on out will not be floated without tax plans to support it. So money for nothing and your checks for free, no more.
NFTs are non-fungible tokens to create digital property for the first time ever. To me, it's clear that this will be the future and it's happening right now. It's not going to happen tomorrow. Finance is being disrupted as we speak.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
If you're seeking financial advice and how to invest in today's markets, Financial Sense Wealth Management can help. From setting up or providing advice on 401k plans, managing corporate cash balances in a zero interest rate environment, to helping individuals, foundations, and businesses achieve their financial goals. Give Financial Sense Wealth Management a call today at 888-486-3939. Let us work together to help you get on the path to success. Call now at 888-486-3939. Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow at financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, the stock market keeps hitting one record after another. On the day we're doing this interview, which is Thursday, the S&P crosses the 4,000 mark for the first time. Where's it going from here? Let's find out with Financial Sense's Frank Barbera. Frank, we're looking at some pretty good numbers with the S&P and the Dow, but not so much on the NASDAQ. So what's going on here?
Good afternoon, Jim. And that's a very good point. Lately, higher interest rates, we've seen a pretty consistent backup in the 10-year yield since early February this year. It's moved from around 1.05% all the way up to a high of 1.75%. And with that, the technology stocks have sort of suffered a reasonable pullback. Not so much evident in the NASDAQ composite, but when you look at some of the big glamour names, a number of them have come down 15-20% from their highs. They've had a nice rebound too, but the high PE ratio, which makes them sort of a long duration growth story, has left technology stocks somewhat vulnerable to higher rates. And so that has been a little bit of a drag on the averages. We've seen a lot of rotation where cyclical stocks have been leading the advance and technology stocks have come off. But overall, as you say, the averages are still making new highs. The S&P up today is really being powered by a rebound in some of those large cap tech stocks, Apple, Google, Facebook, Amazon. And but a lot of the rest of the market, as we head into this Good Friday, Easter holiday, a lot of the rest of the market today is somewhat flat. So it's an interesting point. You know, we see a lot of stimulus in front of us for the stock market and the prospect of the economy reopening and doing very well. And all of that suggests that stock prices could move substantially higher. And in fact, breadth measures have been fairly robust in general. Momentum is pretty solid. So when you look at the averages are doing well so far this year. What could come out of left field? I think there are a few things that could come out of left field. One might be the virus, and another one might just be on the technical front that prices have been extended in some areas, and that you could see more of this churning and maybe the market consolidates or has a small correction in here. So that's my big picture view on the market right now, JP.
When you look at these beneficiaries of COVID, you know, we call them the COVID stocks, the Pelotons, a lot of the high tech stocks, and most especially Amazon, you know, when you're quarantined, a lot of people went to online buying. So that accelerated the trend. But when you look at Amazon, you'd have to go back to August. It really hasn't gone anywhere. Are you seeing that with a lot of the COVID stocks? In other words, is the market shifting from what was driving the market, let's say the COVID type stocks, now going more towards cyclical value versus growth? What's your take on that?
It seems to have been rotating quite a bit. A few weeks ago, we had an epic push to the upside with small cap stocks, maybe a once in a generation. That was back with the GameStop, Reddit speculation, and embodied a number of small cap companies. And indeed, small caps over the last 12 months have been up over 100%. And so they've come off now fairly significantly. And there was a rotation for a brief period of time into staples. Staples now seem to be taking a pause and technology's having a bit of a rebound. So this market has been rotating very quickly through groups. A couple of things I do notice that just sort of stand out in my work. I've noticed that we're past 100 days out on this move to the upside. So there was a big correction a few months ago in the stock market. And from those lows, it's been about 100. That was back in October 2nd. I'm talking about the October 20th, 2020 lows. We're now out about 124 days from that low. And there has been almost no selling pressure on the stock market. I brought a chart with me this week, which highlights that. It's an indicator designed to pick up selling pressure based on movements in the ARMS index, movements in down volume, in declining stocks. And when you look at that, it's plotted on an inverse scale. There's been an almost total absence of real selling pressure, like in a concerted way. It's been a market that's been rotating where the baton has been handed from one group to another, and there's been some selling pressure taking place within groups. But on the major averages themselves, that we've really seen. We see one of the highest readings in many years. This gauge is inversely plotted. And what that says is there's been a real absence of selling pressure on the S&P. I also maintain a 25-day advanced decline oscillator. And this is based on a 1,000 stock universe that I keep, where it's just operating companies. And that has lived above the neutral level in a sustained way now for 124 trading days. It was 120 days through March 26th. A couple of days beyond that. And so this sort of suggests that perhaps the market, that's the longest stretch, 124 days, is the longest stretch we've seen since 1987. And you'd have to go back to the mid-1950s before that. So what that sort of suggests is that, you know, we might be due for something on the order of a 2 to 3, 5% pullback in the market, and then we go higher, given the fact that the larger trend, you know, the reopening of the economy, the stimulus package, all of that is still in a bullish tailwind for the market. But I do see some of these time spans out there, which tell me there's been my up-down volume gauge has not been negative now in almost a year. Since last year, since the March lows, we have not seen a fully oversold reading. That is almost 200 and right now 252 days since the last oversold reading. And that tells me that possibly, you know, we're just due for a little bit of a pullback. And within the context of an ongoing rising trend, you can also see that breadth has been very organized. Advanced decline, a wide variety of breadth measurements are in an uptrend, making higher lows and higher highs. Although recently there's been a little bit of a drop off. And I think that has to do with the small caps. The small caps had a very strong push on record volume, in some ways similar to what we saw in 2000, where they were able to push outside their upper Bollinger band. And then when they came back inside that long-term band, that was a sign that the small cap move had exhausted itself. Back in early 2007, we saw that happen in small caps. And an interesting tell to watch for was that new highs minus new lows on NASDAQ went negative within 7 days of that peak. And that just happened again. So that also happened in 1982, 83 with a big tech boom in small cap stocks. So there's some caution signals out there, but they're small. And I think they really just hint at possibly a market that could consolidate for a little while.
One thing and this goes back to the beginning of the year. We started the year with the 10-year Treasury below 1%. Wall Street, most of the consensus forecast would say, you know, we could hit 1.5%. On the day you and I are talking, it's almost 1.75%. So here's a question. As you look at these interest rate rises, especially on the 10-year, now we're talking about 2%. And Frank, we know as interest rates go up, that's going to be a discounting mechanism for the market. So how much higher does the 10-year note go, number one? And number two, how much higher can it go before it starts creating problems for the stock market?
That's a great question. Jim, I think right now what I've seen is that the internal structure of the interest rate market, we use the 9-day RSI as a simple measure for that, got up to 89 a number of weeks ago on the 9-day RSI, and it has corrected back down to neutral, back down to 50. This is a momentum indicator that's between 0 and 100. And as that correction happened, yields actually gained ground. So they went from 1.52% a few weeks ago to 1.59% most recently. That says that that there's a strong underpinning for the move up in yields. And I would not be surprised to see yields try at some point in the next few weeks to push through 1.75 and make a run at 2%. I think a lot of it's going to depend on the inflation data. and the employment data. We're coming up on an employment report very soon. We've seen the ADP this week was very strong. And we also saw the February employment report was incredibly strong. So if we get another employment report that's strong tomorrow over the holiday weekend, it'll be interesting to see how the bond market reacts early next week. If they can digest that and yields can fall below 1.58, I would say that's probably a pretty good sign for the stock market. On the other hand, if yields start to push up and in the days ahead we see a move through 175, I would definitely think that that would suggest a run towards 2, probably more likely 2.25. And I think there's an outside chance yields could get up to 250, 260 on some kind of a spike. Right now, 250 to 260 is my high threshold for bond yields. I don't think we'll see anything higher than that over the next month or two. But there is a lot of inflation data coming through right in this time period. A lot of the data that we've seen, food prices, energy prices, that may be hitting over the next 2 weeks. So this could be a pretty big litmus test to see, A, how bond yields handle that, and what kind of confidence they have in the Fed's statement about being able to look through inflation data, which they perceive as being transitory.
So let's talk about two other elements of that, and that is as interest rates have risen, and the thing that some people are saying the markets are responding, because we're talking about, Frank, we passed $900 billion in stimulus in December under Trump, $1.9 trillion under Biden. Now Biden's talking about a $3 to $4 trillion stimulus and what could be one of the largest tax increases in U.S. history. Certainly the largest tax increase since World War II in 1942. What impact do you think that's going to have on the market? I can't help but think that higher taxes and higher interest rates somewhere down the road, the market's not going to like that.
I agree, Jim. I couldn't agree more. If that gets passed and actually implemented, it would be hard to look at that and not think that that has some kind of negative outcome down the road. I think for the time being, we're investors, and this probably gets to the idea of somewhat taking a tactical mindset. The backdrop here, the stimulus could be rocket fuel, and it could push the equity markets a lot higher. Today, we're trying to push through 4,000 on the S&P. But again, if that tax bill is passed, I would think that that might be a pretty big negative, an unexpected negative fly in the ointment. And the thing you have to watch is valuations, because valuations, at least on when you look at pre-pandemic, the S&P was around 22 times earnings. Now, because earnings have come down, that multiple has gone considerably higher. We're about 39 times earnings on the S&P right now. But let's take the 22 pre-pandemic number, which is not hugely high, but lofty. Okay. And if you look at the S&P index itself and you zero in on maybe the top 30 or 40 large cap technology names that are really swinging that index day to day, the multiples there and the valuations there are very high. I mean, you see price to sales ratio right now on something, let's say like Square, is 11 times sales, 38 times book, a 4.5 peg. You're looking at a forward multiple next year for Square of 178 times earnings. PayPal, 55 times earnings for next year. Tesla, 161 times earnings for next year. ASML lithography, 48 times earnings next year. I could go on. Microsoft at 30 times earnings. These are not, I remember back in 1999, 2000, when the tech bull peaked, we came into a first quarter earnings season. It was Nortel Networks disappointing. And Nortel was one of the big stocks, along with JDS, Uniphase, Ariba, PMC Sierra. There were a whole bunch of Broad Vision, major stocks that had huge runs to the upside, and they were selling at 100 times earnings, 10 times sales, PEG ratios are 4 or 5, and PEG ratio is price earnings divided by the 5-year growth. And usually, if you're talking about something where you're paying, let's say, 30 times earnings for 30% growth, that's a PEG ratio of 1. That's not so bad. But if you start talking about 2-to-1, you're paying 60 times earnings for 30% growth. You're starting to get into trouble when the PEG is over 2. Back then, we had PEGs of 4, 5, 6, 7 for these high-flying stocks. And I see that has happened again. And in some cases, even considerably higher than that, 14, 15 times on the PEG ratio. So I don't think that, I think the tax hike in that background could be a real trouble. And especially if earnings don't pick up enough. And I have two concerns that float around the back of my mind. I really can't say I see data to support either one of them right now. But one is possibility that the virus, as much as I know, I'm very happy to be heading back out and after being cooped up for a year. I'd love to see life get back to normal, but there is some risk with the variants that the virus could pick up. That's a scenario I think we have to all watch for. And then the other one is just, you know, what this tax hike could do in terms of maybe high multiples. And if earnings don't pick up, there's an argument to be made that within the economy, a lot of student loans were deferred, a lot of rent was deferred. And so some of this stimulus, instead of going into discretionary spending, might just be going into helping people catch up with their bills, and some of the economic data may come in sooner than we expect. So I think that's another area just to keep an eye on.
All right. Well, listen, Frank, as we close, why don't you tell our listeners what you're doing at Financial Sense, especially with the tactical count, what that is, and if they wanted to get in touch with you, how could they do so?
Well, the tactical account uses trailing stop losses. We're managing money in a very conservative fashion. For right now, I think one of the key issues out there for a lot of investors, the retirees especially, you can't get money on interest income in the bank. And so what I'm trying to do is help people get a reasonable rate of return on their capital. But at the same time, as we put capital at risk, make sure that we have a disciplined stop loss below the market and on the entire portfolio so that we keep drawdown very small. And so the idea is to try and get a satisfying return with very little risk and help people get to a point where they can, you know, continue to grow their capital, but in a very conservative way. So if anybody is interested, the phone number is 858-487-3939. And they can just reach out to me at Financial Sense, and I would love to sit down and chat with them.
Well, listen, Frank, tomorrow is Friday, so I got to ask you, were you having dinner? It is Good Friday, and the restaurants are opening. So it's Good Friday, so is it fish tacos?
That's fish tacos. That's exactly right, JP. So we'll get the whole family up for some seafood, and we're really looking forward to a wonderful weekend. I wish everybody a happy holiday weekend, and we'll figure out where we're going to have dinner soon. But it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Take care, Frank. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next month. Bye-bye.
This week, FS Insider had the opportunity of catching up with one of our longtime contributors and guests, Peru Saxena out of Hong Kong, to discuss his outlook on the bull market and the one ETF that he is watching to know where this market is headed. Here's a clip of what he told listeners when it came to the narrative surrounding the big uptick that we saw in interest rates and that putting pressure on growth stocks.
This narrative is not backed by history, is not supported by fact, because if you look at the price action of the S&P and the NASDAQ going back 20 years, you will note that whenever interest rates rose, that the long-term interest rates went higher or the yield curve steepened, that was actually bullish for both the S&P and the NASDAQ.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Everyone wants to retire well. That's not as easy as it sounds. You need to make the right investment choices, decide when to take Social Security, plan for taxes on your retirement income, and create a legacy for your family. to retire well, you need a roadmap to help you get there. Let Financial Sense Wealth Management help you navigate your way to retirement. We provide comprehensive, thoughtful, and personal retirement planning. Call Financial Sense Wealth Management now at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. Start your journey to retiring well today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Chris Poplava, Chief Investment Officer, Financial Sense Wealth Management, joins us for another edition of Smart Macro today. And Chris, in your recent weekly investment update that we posted on our website, which all of you can find if you go to our video tab on financialsense.com, you talked about the recent dollar strength that we've seen. And obviously, as we've been discussing for some time now, we at our own firm have been increasingly rotating into emerging markets, into anti-dollar plays. Those tend to do better when the dollar is declining. However, the dollar has been strengthening recently. So I guess the question is it time to change a bearish dollar stance and trim back on some of those anti-dollar plays? Or where do you think things stand today?
Part of what we're seeing of late are some of the areas that were leading the market have been hit. And I think that's a little bit due to the dollar strengthening. We've seen emerging markets weaken, commodities, a few of them weaken a bit here. And I think that's really due to two reasons. The first being that, and probably the biggest weight, was the looking at the U.S. in terms of how we are going about our recovery and reopening our economies. We're well above our developed peers in terms of vaccinating our population, which means that we're going to be opening up more rapidly than they were. They've kind of run into a few hiccups, and I think what you're seeing is just a little bit of repricing in terms of the U.S., you know, jumping out of the gate quicker rather than alongside our peers, and so that's, I think, leading to a bit of strength in the dollar. Secondly, we're also seeing a bit of spike in inflation in emerging markets, and to counteract that, the Brazilian Central Bank, I believe the South African Bank recently have raised interest rates to strengthen the currency and to bring down inflation. And so some of that weakness going on in those currencies is spilling over to strength in the dollar while these currencies are struggling. And to counteract that, that's why these central banks are raising interest rates to make their currencies look more attractive. So these two impacts, the delay of reopening in Europe and as well as UK versus the US, as well as weakness in some emerging market currencies, I think is really leading to the strength in the dollar. Now, just because Europe is slow to reopen and get their vaccinations under control, you know, I don't think that that's essentially just delaying the inevitable. Eventually, they're going to get their vaccinations up where they can reopen in their economy. And at that point, I do expect the U.S. dollar to continue to weaken, predominantly just because of looking at our explosive twin deficits. For example, if you look at our trade deficit, we have families that are receiving stimulus checks, even though they're still fully employed, and they're spending these on goods. And most of the goods that are consumed in the U.S. and purchased are from abroad. So this really does tend to effectively help our trading partners, maybe more so than us, is where that's ultimately where the dollars are ending up in terms of destination. But I do think with the more stimulus checks that are going out, that we will be spending those as well as drawing down our excess savings in the weeks and months ahead. And all of these are leading to a weaker trade deficit. So I think that will be continuing to weigh on the U.S. And if we do launch a fiscal stimulus package, which is not 100% funded by increased tax revenue, that will also worsen our budget deficit. So I see both the budget and trade deficit continuing on a secular decline in terms of worsening, which I do believe will pull the dollar down eventually.
This week, we spoke with Alexander Anikin at Zug, Switzerland, about his global macro outlook on Insider. And something that he said that I thought was really interesting is that he has a large macro model. And he said that model was at 100% positive. And that's something that we have not seen for many years, if not going back to just after the market bottomed in 2009. That's ticked down just slightly, he said, to around 96% positive. But that's taking into account both fundamentals and technicals, when we think about the breadth of global economies participating in a global recovery, this is a global synchronized recovery. And as you just mentioned, the U.S. and U.S. companies are seeing the largest upward revisions currently, especially in cyclical sectors. So that is helping to bid the dollar higher, while, as you mentioned, Europe is hitting a little bit of a snag. And of course, I think it was just today, news was announced that France had renewed a complete lockdown of their economy. So Europe obviously struggling much more with COVID than we are in the U.S. As you mentioned, we have higher vaccination rates, so that's helping. Any other things that you're looking at or feedback that you're getting from clients in terms of questions regarding our strategy and outlook going forward?
I think the biggest one we get, and I see, which makes sense, is our view on commodities, given the strengthening dollar. We've seen a pretty big slide in gold, which continues to weaken. Silver starting to roll over as well. And, you know, one of the things I showed back in February on one of our smart macro segments was looking at what typically happens in a dollar bear market, meaning when we do see the dollar have a counter trend move, where does it tend to roll over? You know, what's kind of the ending point of a bear market rally in the dollar? And what I found was the dollar rallies were either capped at its 200-day moving average or its one-third retracement from the prior decline. And currently right now, we are bumping up against the 200-day moving average of the dollar, which is a point at which the dollar often would reverse downward. I have some visuals of this where I have a chart of the dollar, its 200-day moving average, as well as the retracement levels. So you can kind of see where this occurs. And I like to use the Bloomberg Dollar Index, not the Dixie or the Dollar Index, which is widely used, mainly because I believe roughly 60% of that's just the euro. So I like the Bloomberg Dollar Index because it more or less resembles our trading partner weights. And so we're pretty much at that level right now on the 200-day. I'm really, you know, curious to see if the dollar rolls over here. But if it doesn't, and it starts to rally a little bit further, it's 38% retracement or one-third retracement roughly. It's only got maybe another 1% to 2% upside. Not a lot from here. And to me, that would make sense for it to roll over. I do think we have probably some near-term upside. I have a feeling that the 200-day will not cap the dollar, mainly because of how aggressive the U.S. is vaccinating our population compared to our peers. I think that will give a little bit more of a lead of the U.S. economic recovery than Europe. So I think that alone could lead to a little bit more upside on the dollar. In the charts that we show from the Monday investment meeting minutes, is I've got a table of the chart of the dollar and a table of foreign currency relative to the dollar. And what you can see over the last 1 day, 5 day, 1 month, and 3 month is that, you know, roughly 75 to, you know, almost 90% of world currencies are down relative to the dollar. However, the opposite is occurred when you look at a 6 month or 1 year basis, the dollar is down against most world currencies. So to me, the bigger picture trend is that the dollar is still likely in a bear market. I think sentiment got pretty bearish on the downside for the dollar. It seemed like everyone was weighted to one side, being dollar bears. So this is a healthy reduction in that excessive bearishness on the dollar. And on the flip side, excessive bullishness on commodities. So I do think this rally will eventually end. And to us, we're using this as an attractive entry point to increase commodity exposure, cyclicals, and anti-dollar type plays.
One thing that you brought up that I thought was really interesting in this last week's video was where you were showing the COVID vaccination rates across various nations and how it seems that market data is now pricing this in. And that this is, again, part of the dollar strength that we're seeing currently. Do you mind sharing a little bit of your insights on that for us?
What I show is basically a regional look at COVID cases. And these are new daily COVID cases. And Italy is more or less where it was back in January and not too far off from its highs last fall. If you look at France, France actually has been accelerating. And recently, their recent peak last week was more or less near the highs last fall. Germany also is moving in the wrong direction. It's not too far off of its highs. While the U.S., we've had a steady improvement ever since January. And so I think when you just look at that, it's very visually clear to see that the U.S. is handling the COVID outbreak much better than our peers just based on our caseload. And part of that, again, I believe is really due to how aggressive we are in terms of vaccinations. There's some really good data that comes regarding this from Bloomberg. And what they effectively are looking at is how much of the population has been vaccinated. And at the current pace, how many months would it take to vaccinate 75% of the population? And based on the current pace, it would take 4 more months to vaccinate 75% of the U.S. population. Now, in contrast to that, Europe, as I mentioned, is significantly behind us in terms of their pace. And at the rate they're going, it would take 13 months, literally three times as long for Europe to vaccinate 75% of their population. And Japan is just getting started. And given they're just getting started, if they kept their pace and didn't ramp it up, it would take them 10 years to vaccinate their population for up to 75% of the population. So clearly, the U.S. has been administering our vaccines earlier, and we're rapidly increasing the doses that we're administering. So until Europe can really kind of speed up that process, I do think the U.S. will pull ahead of everyone, and eventually they're going to catch up. But to me, this really kind of indicates why we're so far ahead of everyone else.
And when it comes to vaccination rates globally being priced into the market, whether or not that is through expectations for a continued recovery, relative currency strength, all of these things that you covered in that video, one other thing that you pointed to that is an excellent piece of data to follow or something to keep on your radar is Bloomberg's U.S. high-frequency data. And that shows quite a bit of interesting trends here when it comes to what you should be doing tactically in portfolios and with your investments. What is that telling you currently?
This was a really neat data series that Bloomberg created. And essentially their point was that the recovery is happening so quickly that if you look at monthly data, which sometimes comes out with multi-month lag, you might get data that is 2 months stale or even sometimes 3 months stale. So they've moved towards daily and weekly data to get a better sense of how we're improving week to week. And they're tracking three main areas. They're looking at the virus, they're looking at the real economy, as well as financial markets. And by looking at the trends from week to week in their table, it's really easy to see what areas are improving. Obviously, looking at virus cases, deaths, and their lockdown index, that essentially the U.S. is rapidly improving since December. We also see some significant improvement in terms of the jobs data. One of the things that is really starting to improve are job postings. So we're starting to see a lot more job postings for people as we start to reopen. We're also seeing some retail sales begin to pick up. And we're also seeing a lot in terms of trucking data is showing some real signs of strength. And obviously, looking at financial markets, you know, the S&P 500 has been doing well. If you look at financial condition indices, those are still looking really good. So overall, we are seeing an improving picture. Now, if we applied this to the other economies such as Europe, the UK, they're probably back to, I would say, where we were maybe in January or February. So we're definitely ahead of them in terms of our trends and improvement. And this is just a great index table that we look at to kind of have a sense of where things are going.
You know, as I mentioned, we spoke with Alexander Anikin out of Zug, Switzerland this week on FS Insider. And when it came to the macro dashboard that he creates, and as I mentioned, his global macro dashboard was at 100% positive. And he said that he likened that when we think about the strength of the recovery and the breadth of it across the globe, he likened it to the summer of 2009 in terms of the most appropriate analog that we can look to where we saw that level of strength and breadth. And it would take quite a bit to shock the global economy and the markets away from that. I mean, you'd have to probably see a massive ramp up in COVID cases across the globe, renewed lockdowns, not just in France, but in US, Europe, and other parts, in order to derail the current recovery that we're seeing. What are your thoughts in terms of that summer of 2009 or that 2009 analog?
I think that's really a good analogy because essentially, you know, the recession ended in I believe it was June of 2009. So we were literally just pulling ourselves out of recession. We're still doing that. And we're not at 100% reopening. You look at air travel, you look at cruise ships in terms of their activity or casinos. We're nowhere close to, you know, being at full capacity, and especially in terms of, you know, the jobs market. So we've got a long ways to go. And that's effectively what the Fed has said as well. They said that they're not even thinking about raising rates. They've said they've got a long ways to go in terms of where they want to see employment and their dual mandate. So I do think there's a lot of economic growth ahead. The tricky part will be knowing when the market has discounted this, or if the market has gotten ahead of itself and needs a pause to catch its breath before resuming higher. So that, I think, will be the tricky part, is, you know, watching those periods in which the market needs to breathe, and making sure that that is not a sign of a major top, just two steps forward, one step back kind of a thing. But I would agree with that. We're still very, very early in this recovery. There's still a lot of people on continuing jobless claims. We need to see that number come down dramatically even further. So I do think there's a long ways to go before we're even close to ending this economic cycle that began last year.
Well, and as you pointed out in previous Smart Macro segments and in a number of the weekly investment videos, if you look at the S&P 1500, right, where you aggregate all of the different stocks, small, mid, and large, into one index, and you look at the breadth levels, I mean, we're nowhere near what you would typically see at a major market top.
That's true. I mean, usually when you see market peaks and you study them, markets roll over it's a process. Market tops are a process. It's usually a black swan event where it's not a process and all of a sudden the market just rolls over. That's essentially what happened last year. But typical tops, you see the market begin to thin out, where it's not a case of a rising tide lifts all boats, where you start to have usually the mega caps, the growth type stock names continuing to march higher, and yet the smaller companies or middle cap companies are rolling over. And so that does take a process. And again, it's very rare the market peaks right in concert with a peak in momentum. And I measure that by looking at the monthly MACD buy signals on the S&P 1500 members. And we recently breached 90%. And just to give you some context behind that, that was the highest reading that I had seen since I've been tracking this data since 2012. And that's even higher than where we were back in 2013 when the Fed was doing QE3. And back then 2013, the market was up, the S&P was up over 30% that year. And it really wasn't until 2015 when we had a significant pullback in the markets during the summer of 2015. And just prior to that, it was almost a split market where roughly 50% of the members were on a monthly sell while half were on a monthly buy. So, you know, at that point, you're kind of going through an identity crisis when half are on sells and half are on buys. And again, we're a far cry from that. We're at, you know, over 90%. So again, I would be very hesitant to turn bearish here. I think that could be a mistake. I think there's just too much money, too much momentum, and too much improvement yet ahead to turn the dial towards a defensive posture at this time.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth advisory team, which has been servicing clients for over 35 years, feel free to give us a call at 888, that's 888-486-3939. Also, don't forget to tell your friends and family about our podcast, Financial Sense News Hour, to stay on top of the latest developments in the market and how they impact your investments. Lastly, if you aren't already a subscriber and would like to listen to more of our premium content airing 3 days during the week through our website or through an app on your mobile device, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.